American Security Project, I'm adjunct fellow August Cole. I'm joined today by Lisa Lambert, a journalist with Thomson Reuters. Lisa, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You've been writing a lot about state and local government issues. I'm particularly interested in some of the recent work you've been doing on public colleges and universities and how they're going to fare in the next year or two, given that education is such a big part of American competitiveness, something we're focused on at ASP.
Right. Well, you know, yesterday the National Governors Association put out this huge report, once again saying that they need to find a way to match workers with jobs. You know, that there are jobs available, that employment is growing, but most workers don't have the skills for those jobs. So once again, you know, they kind of made this call for more education, more skills training. And the problem is that because of the Great Recession, public universities, public colleges have been cutting spending on pretty much those same areas. Last week, the National Association of State Budget Officers took this really radical stand. You don't usually think of state budget officers as being radicals. They rarely have positions or opinions on anything. They see themselves more as kind of executors of the budget. But they put out this pretty long and scathing report saying that we need to find a way to stop cutting spending on public higher education. We also need to look at reorganizing how research universities in particular, but also community colleges and state colleges, operate to try to find some cost savings and to try to make them more efficient.
Do these look like big structural changes that will endure even into, you know, a post-Great Recession period, to use your framework?
I'm skeptical, just because higher education seems like it takes a long time to move. There's a lot more going on with community colleges. I think the problem with making major reforms at the community college level is that people don't frequently think about them. I'm not sure where they're going to find the political will to do that. And I'm not sure, you know, I was talking to the associations that represent public universities, and they said they're open to these structural changes, but I don't know once they try to start implementing them how quickly those changes will happen. I think that there will be pushback from people at the university.
One thing I've been looking at is the interplay between the private sector and the public sector, you know, engaging students, engaging universities earlier on in the education cycle to, you know, create more of a pipeline, you know, to use that word, for potential workers. Is that something that you're seeing traction and effectiveness with at all at the local level, state level?
Well, one place that is really pushing for it is Chicago. And it's strange because, you know, right now what we're hearing about mainly with Chicago is that they're closing public schools.
Sure.
But at the community college level, Rahm Emanuel is pushing to create that pipeline that you just mentioned. And again, I don't know how the timing will work. You know, it takes you at least 2 years just to get through community college. And then you have to start developing these courses and hiring the people who can teach those courses. But timing-wise, it might be a little bit slower than probably what we would all like.
To switch gears slightly to the public finance climate right now, you know, the bond market for state and local and investors, but also for the officials trying to raise funds, you know, outside the, you know, kind of conventional funding streams. What is that like right now? And is that something that has reached any kind of stability, or is it still turbulent?
Well, interest rates have been really super low on municipal bonds. And so that has been, it's been a great help to especially smaller cities and smaller issuers that don't usually borrow. They can borrow right now for very little money. Last month, there wasn't a lot of new debt sales, and there was a bit of, the stock market did kind of provide an obstacle, right? Everybody was pulling their money out of municipal bonds and going over to equities and trying to take advantage of that run-up. So I'd say in the last month, it's been not as wonderful as it has been for the last year when it comes to issuing municipal bonds. I think in terms of financing, I think they're okay. I think the main concern is that revenues are growing for states, local governments, but they're growing slowly. And then I think the other thing that they're very nervous about is tax exemption. for the last few years, there's been a lot of discussion at the federal level of not giving the buyers of municipal bonds tax exemption for the interest paid by those bonds, and that's their chief selling point. So in the last, I don't know, 6 months, it seems like there's been a lot more talk about getting rid of that tax exemption, or at least lowering it, or somehow minimizing it or capping it. And that is making them very nervous that they won't be able to sell bonds because the investors don't know really what the value of that interest is.
And at a time when rates are so low, every few basis points counts, right?
Exactly.
You know, the notion of financing is something that also comes up when you look at pension obligations in the public sector, which, you know, I've heard some people liken to a ticking time bomb. You know, I don't see a lot of attention on that, at least at the Washington level, that you do see with other issues. What is the dialogue or the awareness like that, you know, from what you're seeing?
Well, I think there's always that tension between states and the federal government, where they don't want the federal government coming in and telling them what to do. There have been some lawmakers, Devin Nunez, who come forward from time to time and present ways of requiring states to report their pension obligations a little bit differently, or to calculate those obligations a little bit differently, that they say is going to be more accurate. But really, it is going to be more at the state level. So a couple of weeks ago, we had the SEC come forward and say that Illinois has not been honest about its pension obligations and its bond offering. And that was like a huge, huge deal. But really, it's going to vary from state to state. It's going to be something that their individual bondholders will have to, I think, hold them accountable on.
Do you expect much interest at the political level, again, in kind of tackling this with a, you know, the public pensions being something that obviously, you know, at a local level has a ripple effect that affects, you know, federal policy to some extent. Do you see any interest in taking this on again at a national level, even though these are, of course, you know, different state to state?
You know, it came up a couple of years ago that they wanted to create a way for states to file for bankruptcy. And the idea was that then if they filed for bankruptcy, they could basically disband their public public pension obligations, and they wouldn't have to pay them, or they could renegotiate them. And no state wanted it. No Republican state wanted it. No Democratic state wanted it. They, I think, will resist any sort of federal intervention. So the ways that it can happen is going to be through the SEC, through the Municipal Securities Rulemaking Board, more through the regulatory agencies, putting pressure on them to disclose those obligations. But beyond that, creating some sort of federal law about how much you have to fund your pension or how you have to organize your pension, I don't see that happening. I see the states really resisting.
So to some extent, there's an issue of states' rights or autonomy, I guess. I mean, are there other, you know, to kind of take a higher altitude look, paradigm shifts with that are an outgrowth of what we've seen here, you know, given the economic and political climate of the last few years?
What do you mean, shifts in what?
Any shifts in how states view their sovereignty and rights sort of within the construct of the relationship with the federal government, I should say.
Well, you know, the states got a huge, huge wad of money through the stimulus plan, and then the stimulus plan ended. And so I've been writing about cliffs for a while now, because they used to talk about being pushed off the stimulus cliff before the fiscal cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were really grateful for that money. I think they really needed that stimulus money. But once it ended, I really saw them kind of say, like, okay, now we have to find a way out of this that isn't related to relying on the federal government. And I see them becoming more autonomous and independent. And one thing that I find really interesting that they're doing is different governors are going to China. And they're having what they call, you know, these subnational dialogues with their equivalent over in China. Or in the case of Washington, D.C., the mayor just sent a whole delegation to talk to companies to come invest in the district. And in some ways, it seems like they're almost bypassing the federal government
sure.
and going to China themselves.
Sure.
They're just becoming a lot more autonomous.
Well, Lisa, as a last question, are there any underappreciated issues that are out there that people aren't paying attention to that should be focusing on more?
That's a good question. I would say that in terms of going back to this idea of federal issues in the states, I would say it's the debt ceiling negotiations. I don't think people understand that we're going to come up against the debt ceiling this summer, and a lot of places, both states and cities, are looking at that and really wondering what is going to be the result of those negotiations. And they're frankly very worried. In 2011, we came up against the debt ceiling, and that's what resulted in sequestration and the fiscal cliff and all of these other issues that they've had to deal with, all of these other threats to their budgets that they suddenly had to contend with, even though they weren't participants in it. So I think when we start coming up against the debt ceiling again this summer, the mayors are on guard, the governors are on guard to make sure that the federal government once again doesn't come up with a compromise that creates cuts for them or creates difficulties for them.
Sounds like another season of cliffhangers.
Exactly.
Well, Lisa, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with Lisa Lambert of Thomson Reuters. And with the American Security Project, I'm Adjunct Fellow August Cole.